This is Gary Wakefield, and you're listening to Queer Life Stories.
So I'm Margie Fisher, and I am 68, and I'm a lesbian. I grew up in Sydney, and I grew up sort of around Bondi Junction and then the North Shore in Lynfield. Yeah, that's where I grew up and lived until I was 31. And my parents were Austrian Jews who escaped the Holocaust and came and went to China, because China was letting Jews in at the time, Shanghai. And a lot of my family were killed in the Holocaust, but my mother, father, and two uncles, and my Oma and Opa, my grandparents on my father's side, escaped and went to China. And then after 10 years, the Chinese Revolution happened, and then Australia wanted skilled migrants, so they got to Sydney. Well, and I was born 2 years later. My father was a carpenter, a cabinet maker. My mother was a sort of secretary shopkeeper. My grandma was a seamstress, and my grandfather was a French polisher. And my brother was a carpenter, but they're all dead. I wrote a show about it called The Dead Ones.
Wow.
When they first came, got a job in, it was in a timber mill in Tasmania, and they put shit on his sandwiches. He was a refo, and you know, they hadn't, he didn't stay there. I grew up Jewish, but not a lot of people know what that actually means. So basically, being Jewish is not about Israel. So, you know, Israel is a place with Israeli people that live in it, and, you know, Palestinians and loads of different people. But so my parents were Austrian Jews, they weren't Orthodox Jews, so they were Jewish, but they were culturally Jewish. And when they came to Australia, and they of course continued to be Jewish, and so I went to Jewish Sunday school, and my friend up the road, their family had Jewish festivals, so I liked to go to the Jewish festivals. And on high holidays, my parents went to the synagogue, and they got my father to build the woodwork around where they keep the Torahs and stuff. And so I grew up, I refused to learn Hebrew at Sunday school. I just couldn't. And but yeah, I grew up being Jewish, yes. And I still am. Childhood was, at the time, assimilation was what was happening. So Aboriginal people were supposed to die out, or if there were any left, well, no, to die out. And everybody else was supposed to assimilate. So it was before multiculturalism. So I, along with other refugee children, because they were refugees, I wanted to be Australian, like, desperately. And even though I spoke Austrian and Yiddish at home, I really didn't want people to see my grandparents a lot, you know, because they weren't Australian. And my father was a mountaineer as well, and so he was one of the first people and it was European people that that built the huts like that are on the snowy mountains where people can ski tour between the well, they were huts then, so they built them, and we went, you know, skiing when I was young, and I did not want to be a mountain climber. But I did have to do a lot of walking on skis. Yeah, it was a good childhood, but because of the Holocaust, like, I grew up, I became sort of fairly obsessed with the Holocaust and read a lot about it, everything I could find, at a very young age. So I was always felt different. And the school that we moved, the suburb we moved to, there weren't, I don't know, there was like 8 Jewish kids out of, well, maybe 10 Jewish kids out of 1,000 in the school. So, yeah, I was wanting, I did not want to be different, but I always was. And also, I wanted to eat things like Gravox and Tom Piper, braised steak and vegetables, and things like that. And I did bring them home in cans, and my Austrian grandma just was completely horrified. And then I turned into a vegetarian, and that wasn't as bad as the Gravox and Deb mashed potato. But I was a pretty different sort of kid. Like, I went to the library a lot. But I did have boyfriends, and I did be heterosexual. When you look back, I mean, if someone would have said, you don't have to have a boyfriend, matter of fact, you can be on your own and it's fine, or if someone would have said, you know, you can choose, you can be, you know, like lesbian, heterosexual, bisexual, you know. But I didn't know that there was an option. But at the athletics club, there was a dance which I went to, and there were loads of what I now know were lesbians dancing with each other. That was pretty thrilling. But, you know, looking back, I think I did have a really good relationship with a Jewish man. I didn't have terrible relationships with men, but it was evident that I was in love with women pretty well all along. I've always been kind of... ideas and things are not as... I spend a lot of time in my mind and loved learning. And then there were effects of being a Holocaust survivor's child. But I was in a circus, and because I've always been a performer, and I didn't realise that my best friend, I was in love with my best friend who was a woman. And, you know, we had a house together, we did everything together, we sometimes slept in the same bed, but we both had boyfriends in the circus. And so she turned into a lesbian, and I was, we were hanging around with lots of lesbians, and I had felt I had to tell them that I wasn't a lesbian, and they just said it's a matter of time, and it was. So when she turned into a lesbian, and, you know, the thing was, we were possibly always, who knows, I was heartbroken soon after, because she met somebody who I realised was going to be the person she was going to be with, and it was no longer me. Therefore, I must have been in love with her all the time and thought she was my closest friend. So then I found out that that must mean that I'm a lesbian, because my reaction was so massive, and then that's what happened. Yeah. We were in the circus, and we were, this was in Sydney, and we toured around all over Australia. And so when she had met the woman she was going to have children with, which they did, quite early on, because this was the, like, 1983, which lesbians having children was not, like, from the start, was not a very, you know, popular thing to do. Well, there wasn't a lot happening, really, from that we knew. So then I got mentally ill. No, I went to India with my Jewish boyfriend for 6 months, at 7 months. And when we came back, Bronwyn was in the relationship and the circus ended. So I got really mentally ill, and somebody said, with depression, and somebody said, go to Adelaide because there's really good therapists there. And also we toured to Adelaide, so I knew Adelaide as a creative place, and I'd also done shows for adults, you know, only, not just community shows. And so I didn't realise therapy took a long time, so I came to Adelaide, and my parents were really scared because I was really ill. And then, oh, that's a whole other story, but then, like, 9 months later, I got better and realised that era of my life had ended, and I was actually now in Adelaide, and it was a good place to be. So that's how I got here.
Did the Jewish boyfriend come with you?
No, the Jewish boyfriend got typhoid. When we came back from India, he got typhoid, and I was really mentally ill. No, he went to Hungary because his background is Hungarian, and when he went to Hungary, I came back from India early, and that's when my friend had met the life partner and the circus ended. So by the time he got back, I was mentally ill, and he came to see me in Adelaide, and I was going, he got typhoid. The symptoms really happened when he was here, so I went to visit him in hospital. But he was fine about our relationship ending because he was okay with that. And he was okay that I was a lesbian. And he's a lovely person. And luckily, there was a doctor who specialised in tropical medicine, and he actually got better. Then he went back to Sydney. Yeah. Well, what happened was that I got better really quickly because I'd been seeing a two therapists who at the time, it wasn't really a fashion, but it was sort of pretty anti-drug in terms of psychiatric illnesses. Well, yeah. And so I didn't get better for a really long time, and I didn't sleep. And eventually they got really scared because I was sort of their responsibility. Well, I was a client and I wasn't getting better. Meanwhile, I was living with a lesbian who let me stay at her house. And eventually they sent me to a psychiatrist who went, oh my God, take sleeping pills and antidepressants and you'll be fine, which is exactly what happened. And when I got better, I started to be unbelievably creative because it was like a light switch turning on. And then I started to write a show called Ida Rosenblatt Gets Her Shit Together, which was a solo show about shit, poo, which was very successful. And I met a woman called, her name then was Roxy Bank, and we fell in love with each other. And she was also a theatre worker. And then we started a theatre company together called Vital Statistics Women's Theatre Company, with a woman I'd known, a performer I'd known before, called Ollie Black. So there was the three of us, and there were very few roles for women in theatre, and very few good roles, and, well, any roles really. And there were very few women who got opportunities to be directors, production managers, technical theatre workers and designers. So we were a women's theatre company, and we got an exemption from the Equal Opportunities Act so that we could not have to employ men. But we didn't dislike men. We just didn't want, we just wanted to work with women. And our thing was to do shows that were popular. So, you know, we toured South Australia, we did shows in the country, we wrote our own shows, it was surprising work because it was quite varied and most of it was really funny. Yeah, so, but all the, everything we did had a lesbian character in it or a gay character. And sometimes it was really obvious, well, fairly obvious. And other times it was somebody, a woman who was not having a relationship with anyone. So there were women that were not heterosexual in everything we did. And yeah, we were very successful. When we applied for grants, because we were professional theatre workers, all of us had been, the three of us had been professional theatre workers before, and we had other skills, like Ollie was an administrator, and we both could write grant applications, and we could all write and perform. But Roz was more of a writer. I'm still her partner. Like, this is a long-term relationship with a child. We were lesbians, and obviously we knew we were lesbians, but we did not want a lesbian theatre company. We wanted to do popular work. So our politics was that we wanted lesbians in everything we did.
What was Adelaide like in terms of gay friendliness?
Oh, fabulous. It was very, I mean, at the time, Don Dunstan was still alive, but, you know, not being the premier, but all queer people in Australia knew that there was money for the arts in South Australia, that homosexuality had been decriminalised. It was the first state. There were cappuccino machines in pubs. I couldn't believe that. And there was eating outside on the pavement, you know, and there was a women's advisor who was a lesbian, who, like, it was the first women's advisor in Australia. It was a Labor government. There was also things like a women's information switchboard, a working women's centre, stuff that I'd never... I was amazed. And also these places were government funded and were in the city. Like, you could see them. They weren't kind of, you know, in someone's garage. It was extraordinary. And also there was money for the arts, so we could actually get money to do our work. I mean, it was hard, but it wasn't hard because we were doing something that everybody thought was fantastic in one way or another, because we were doing work in, I mean, it was the days of art in working life, so unions had money and we did work, like shows on work sites and all sorts of things. I did a show called The Gay Divorcee, which toured to Mardi Gras and Melbourne. That was a solo show for Vital Statistics. But Roz wrote a show for Vitals called Yellow Roses, and it was about her brother's gay, but it had a gay character in it, and it had two lesbians, and it had a family, And it was a really extraordinary show. And it was, we did it at the Festival Centre here. And that was also new work got supported. Mm. So you could do sort of new work at the Festival Centre. There was a program where you could. And then we toured it to Mardi Gras and did it at Nimrod Theatre, like, you know, big deal things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then a show called Erotics with an X that was about safe sex, and it had queer, it was everything, and it had two women kissing on stage. That was a bit exciting. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was, we did it, you know, and it was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you were pushing the boundaries of what was acceptable back then?
Constantly. Constantly, all my life. But definitely, but it was also the era where there was other, we weren't a community theatre company, we were a company that did all sorts of work. But a lot in the community, and there were other community theatre companies like Junction Theatre Company. So the arts have been decimated in South Australia and, you know, nationally with the government, the current government getting rid of the Department for the Arts federally. But there was money for the arts, and so, yeah, there isn't now. Well, there is, but in that era, there were second tier, they're called theatre companies, so not the state theatre company and the opera and stuff, and that was thriving. Now it is really difficult, and a lot of them don't exist. But Vital Statistics, the company we started, still exists.
How was the coming out process at that age?
It was great. Well, everybody else, there were people going, you know, like, finally, I was in a feminist community, not, you know, hanging around with people in theatre that were queer, except we didn't use the word then. Mm. So coming out was sort of completely simple. And you know, of course it would have been much harder if I was coming out when I was, you know, 16 or in my, you know, 20s, because I was more myself and I was, more confident of who I was, and that makes a massive amount of difference. When I told my parents, they were not happy. But my brother, was my brother dead? Yes, my brother was already dead. And I was all they had, and they were very upset that I wasn't going to have children. However, then I did. But my father was dead then. I wasn't the birth mother. But my mother did end up having a grandchild when she was 87. But it was actually harder coming out as a Jew than it was as a lesbian.
Wow. Mm.
Yeah, in amongst queer people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there a stigma around homosexuality in Jewish culture?
Well, there's no such thing as Jewish culture. There's Jewish cultures, and there's Jewish religion, and there's Jewish spirituality. And so, for instance, I belong to the Progressive Synagogue in Adelaide, although I don't go hardly at all, and the rabbi is a woman. And she's not a lesbian, but she's always was completely cool with gayness. And, you know, there's gay queer synagogues in America, and there's lesbian rabbis, and there's gay rabbis, and there's transgender rabbis. The transgender ones are more recent. However, in the very Orthodox Jewish communities, which are the ones where the men wear the big hats and have their talluses hanging out and have got long sideburns and all that stuff, absolutely not. It is not okay. However, I was never in that, in the Orthodox community. So the Jewish community, the progressive Jewish community, were fine. It was actually other queer people that were not fine. Queer people are anti-Semitic just like everybody else. I mean, I'm not all queer people. And Adelaide hasn't got very many Jews. So when I was in Sydney, I didn't mention it. I did not mention being Jewish ever, even in Sydney. Because I was trying to fit in and I thought people would be anti-Semitic, and so I didn't mention it. But I also didn't want to mention it, because of internalised anti-Semitism, as well as, yeah. So when I came to Adelaide and there were so few Jews in Adelaide, and it hadn't been a big focus of my life, except I was Jewish all the time. When I was performing in Sydney, this Jewish lesbian said to me, "You're so funny. You've got your Jewish humour is just fantastic." I didn't know my humour was Jewish. Not that all my humour's Jewish, but in this show it was. And then I thought, oh God, you know, like that, yes. So then when I came to Adelaide, I went to a Jewish lesbian conference that was in Melbourne. And then I came back and went, right, you know, I'm going to be out about that. So then I got met with people not knowing what I was talking about, because there really is under 2,000 Jews in Adelaide. I think there's like 1,400, and not all of them are out there talking about it. Not that I talk about it all the time. So people didn't know what that meant. People thought that meant that I was pro-Israel, and that's a complex subject, that I was anti-Palestinian, that I was some sort of rare breed. So it was harder. Mm. Funny, isn't it? Well, I met Roz because she was a theatre worker and she was performing, and I thought, she's a really good performer. And she was hadn't had a girlfriend for a few years, which was really great, because there wasn't that kind of, like, you know, on the rebound sort of scene. So that's how I met her. But before that, I'd had a few short-term lesbian relationships. So that was really good, because I wasn't, you know, a lesbian virgin, you know, because that's a whole other scene. So I met her. She was a soccer player. That was impressive. I had a blue van. She was impressed with my blue van. We both wanted to do theatre. She saw me perform in Ida Rosenblatt Gets Her Shit Together. She was working as a lighting operator on that show. We started, you know, we were terribly excited by each other. And she was living in a lesbian household, and we fell in love with each other. That's the story. Yeah.
So you've been together for how long?
I think it's 34 years. I know.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. It's amazing to me. The really good thing was that we were ourselves to begin with. I mean, Roz had also had more relationships than I had, and had been a lesbian all her life. So she was very sure of who she was, and I was just really happy, just beside myself with sort of like happiness. We were being creative together. However, that we did split up for a while, because we were doing everything together all the time because we were in the theatre company, and I was a producer of her work, which meant that I had to hassle her. I knew what she was doing at home, you know, like it, in terms of as well as at work, and it was not good that doing. I mean, people in relationships, you know, can get to doing everything together. However, this was work as well, and so the psychiatrist said. Then I got mentally ill. And the psychiatrist said it was a healthy reaction, wasn't my idea, because we had to separate. Like, we had to separate who we were really clearly. And after that, we didn't work together, which was really great. And I stayed at Vitals, and she started writing for television and went to live in Sydney, and I left Vitals and started Feast. Roz had always wanted a child, or children, as a lesbian, because she'd always been a lesbian, just about. And I didn't, because I think that was just, it was still, now we're talking 1997, it was still not, you know, everyone wasn't doing it, but I felt like, you know, we were living a life, no, she'd wanted a child before that. We were living, you know, a kind of theatre life where we were travelling and working, and I just sort of didn't want to do it. But eventually she said, I'm going to have a child with or without you, so make up your mind. So I did make up my mind to do it. So then followed the process, and that was hard and took a few years. And then through you know, known donor, through IVF, and Roz was living in Sydney because she was working on the television, being a television writer, and you had to live in Sydney, and I was in Adelaide working and Feast, the queer festival, and I came and went, and lesbians had access to fertility clinics in Sydney at that time, without shame or pretending. And then Roz got pregnant, and that was great, and she was 42, which is a big deal, because that's a, you know, obviously near the end of when you can do that. Well, she was 41, she was 42, and she had Ruth, who was born in 2000. So now she is 20. I understand that thing now of, she's my baby, and all that, because that's what my parents said. Mm. So, absolutely, it is something where you look back and, you know, not with regret, but kind of like amazement that journey happened. And there's so much, you know, it was an amazing journey, but it's still continuing, because you know, she's gonna leave home soon, and that's completely fine with us. But you know, they remain your children. So, yeah, she's great. She's wonderful. Because we were older, it was not as difficult, because we could, you know, we felt confident in who we were. 'Cause I started a queer youth drop-in, which is still going. And so for young queer people now, it is not all, you know, easy. It is for some, but not for others. So it is, you know, and being gender diverse and non-binary, you know, there's challenges that are different challenges. And there always were challenges and tough things for people and trans people, you know, like all that. But we were more sure of ourselves. But it's a process of continually coming out. Like, so, you know, coming out in the play group, coming out in the primary school, you know, except that the heterosexual parents really wanted to leave their kids with us because we were so marvellous and we weren't getting divorced, you know, like, because they all, you know, a lot of them were, you know, having a hard time, and they were saying, you know, we wish we could be lesbians, and the school was supportive, but it's still, it's always there, but and with the referendum on gay marriage, I mean, that was a really, you know, it made us feel completely outraged that people were judging who we were, you know, I mean, everybody would know that. So it's always, but see, now I don't give a shit about hardly anything. So to do with being myself, so it is not difficult now.
Yeah,
but it can be still, because Roz plays golf and she's in a golf I know, amazing. I never thought I'd be but you know, that's what's so good about her. I feel like I've had a relationship with, like, you know, at least five different people. But you know, the way, like, women, it's women golfers are the minority, and she had a queer golf day at her golf club for Feast, which is the queer festival, and that was, and it was really good. But that was her coming out at the to the whole golf club, so that made her feel shy. You know, and not like terrified, but another version of coming out.
Tell me about Feast. How did that start?
Well, so I'd finished at Vital Statistics, and I got an award called the Roz Bauer Award, which means that you get money so that you don't have to work for a year and you don't have to produce anything, which is really great. So it's not a massive amount of money, but it's enough. It's gone up now, which is really good. So I had a year, and I was thinking, why hasn't Adelaide got a queer festival? And that's because, I think, well, there's many reasons, but one of them is because of Don Dunstan and all that progressiveness, that there was not as much reason for queer people to fight for their rights because they had them. That's not to say there wasn't discrimination and 50 million other bad things, but a festival hadn't arisen out of protest. And also Adelaide... See, it was much easier for us because we didn't come from here. So I could see the advantages of Adelaide and go and ask everybody to help with things because I could see the networks of theatre and queerness and all the rest of it. But it was harder for people in Adelaide because it is a relatively small place. And also I was aware that with having a Pride March... people were nervous in case their aunties saw them out on the street. So I thought, well, it's time, you know, and lots of people got really excited. And then I had two gay men and a lesbian who I knew through the arts, and we just went, let's do it, and we did.
And what year was that?
1977, so it's now 23 years.
And you were involved with? Are you still involved with Feast?
I've just finished.
Okay.
But I mean, I was involved. The four of us were co-artistic directors, and then Luke and I were for a few years, and then Luke left, and then I was I'm kind of I stay in things. I'm a sort of, I don't know, dedicated, like, I don't like change, so therefore I stay. No. So when we thought, we're trying to think of a name, which is always really hard, Mardi Gras and Midsummer are not names that say, really say queer, but people are used to them. So Feast was the one we came up with because it was a plenty, like loads to choose from and enjoy. But people thought it was a food festival. And fair enough. And people have said, you know, like it needs to change its name. And maybe it will now that I'm not there. So it started off as a multi-art form festival from the start. It started off with government funding because we could apply. We knew what we were doing. Mm. It wasn't very much, but to begin with, it's still not very much compared. But we also, like between us, knew the arts community. So we could borrow things, we could ask people for favours. Mm. So it was, you know, every art form right from the start and really good quality stuff. And it was, you know, Robert Desay wasn't famous yet and a whole load of people were just, that are now, you know, Christos Tsiolkos wasn't famous. Well, he was a bit famous. But it was just like, so a lot of people were burgeoning, like the scene of queer novelists and poets and stuff. It wasn't a flowering of that stuff that we could tap into. And also, of course, because Adelaide hadn't had a queer festival, it was just thrilling. Mm. There had been one event that had continued that it was called Picnic in the Park. So there was a celebration. And of course there had been, you know, queer events and everything, but there hadn't been a festival. Mm. Yeah. Feast was very, from the beginning, worked with queer Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, like actually far ahead of other queer festivals, and that community development projects have always made Feast very different. So because of the founder's background, because we were community artists as well as performing theatre artists, that thing of initiating projects with people in queer communities and then doing them, that can be visual arts exhibitions. Last year for a few years there's been Queers Underground, which was young queer people reading their work in tunnels underneath a building in Adelaide. You know, it's been working with not disadvantaged minority group, you know, smaller groups within the community, like did work with older queer people long before it became, you know, recognised as something that needs to be recognised. Mm. Work with multicultural queer communities. So that kind of community development stuff is really precious to me as an arts worker, and you know, I'm still doing it. But yeah, I think that's important to say. I've got to mention Gay Bingo. So Gay Bingo, I started Gay Bingo because there was a health service in Adelaide that included young queer people, and that it had drop-in a trans one and a gay one and a lesbian and bisexual. I mean, they were divided into groups, but of course they were fluid between them. And Feast did projects with them. And then they closed the service down, and then I couldn't stand it. So I thought, fuck that, I'll just start a drop-in. So I did. And But I was on the board of Feast, and they said, like, why do you want to have a drop-in? Like, that's not what we should be doing. And I said, well, you know, it's really important, and they are an audience. So they said, okay, but you have to... And I said, I will apply for money. I won't take away money from Feast. And then it's hard to get money. So I started doing gay bingo. So I've been doing gay bingo for 6 years or more, working with, you know, other, like, a drag queen and a compere, and those people have changed, and we do that for nothing, and all the prizes are donated and all the money goes to the drop-in. So it's a great way of funding something. And sometimes, like, I'm going home to write a grant today, but that's not my Feast work. So apart from that, so drop-ins every second Thursday, and bingo is every Sunday, but we're having a break. We come back on the 2nd of February. So that will continue, but that's, it's definitely work, but it's not, it's creative for me, as well as being responsible. It employs people as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get support, really. I mean, yeah, find help. I mean, yeah, and be proud of who you are, and yeah, find kindred spirits. There's a group in Adelaide called Kindred Spirits, which is made up of trans and other people, you know, and everywhere there is that there is now in Australia. And then there's also things like Rainbow Amnesty. So in terms of looking outside of the struggles here, I mean, God, around internationally there's plenty. But yeah, the message is, if you're feeling good, there's plenty of things to be doing, and to just live, really.
Brilliant.
If you're struggling with your own mental health, please contact Lifeline on 13114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636. Both services are available 24/7. If you would like to tell your story, share your experiences, or would just like to get in touch, please email us at queerlifestories@outlook.com. Or you can find us on social media, Facebook and Instagram, just search for Queer Life Stories. This podcast is a no-budget, one-man operation to produce, but you can support this podcast by donating or subscribing to us at Patreon. That's patreon.com/queerlifestories. If you're listening in Tasmania and would like support regarding your sexuality, gender, or intersex status, contact Working It Out on 6231 1200 or find them on Facebook. QLife provide anonymous and free LGBTI peer support and referral for people across Australia wanting to talk about sexuality, gender identity, relationships, and more. They're available 3 p.m. to midnight every day on 1-800-184-527, or you can web chat with them at qlife.org.au. You can hear future episodes of Queer Life Stories on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Please follow, subscribe, rate, review, and share. We will be back soon. Thank you for listening. Take care of yourself and each other.